Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is the Writer's Lounge, show number 57. This is October 28th, 2013, and this is, 3 days before Halloween. So this is our Halloween show tonight, and this, of course, is the show where we showcase new authors. And again, once again, I am your host, Tom Riddell, and shortly I'll be bringing in our co-host, Robin Eduardo. A brief intro to today's show. We're having on Kevin Folliard, who is a return author to the Writer's Lounge. He's been on two other times, so I think he wins the award for the most number of times that an author has been on the Writer's Lounge. And he'll be on here to discuss his book, Violet Black and the Curse of Camp Coldwater. A very interesting story that I'm sure you're going to like. So get on out there and do some searching and buy that book right now. You can find us over at the Writer's Lounge blog at TomRiddell.com/blog, and you can listen to the shows over there on the Blog Talk Radio player located in the upper left-hand corner of the page. Of course, you can find us on Facebook. Just type in the Writer's Lounge, and you'll find us there on Facebook. And also, of course, we're on Twitter, and you can contact us by email at twl11@yahoo.com. Upcoming guest authors on November 11th, we're going to have back to the show another returning author, Eric Ekstrom, with his Everett Holmes series. And his book this time around is Sanctuary of the Damned. So you want to stay tuned for that on November 11th. Magic Pen Web Design is one of our sponsors, and it offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. Get on over there to magicpenwebdesign.com and let Magic Pen help you to sell that next book with a website design that works its magic for you. In our new little promotion here on the Writer's Lounge, we have what's called TWL Book Promotion, and you can go over to our Facebook page and learn more about that. I won't waste the time in telling you about how you can sign up for that. Just get in over there and take a look. Go ahead and like us while you're there also. And with that, the book promotion ads, I have a couple of them today. Actually, I have three of them. And the first one would be The God Within by Hazel Sinanen. And the synopsis of that book is it says that God Within speaks its intended to inspire others to take inward steps through intent, desire, and action to allow their higher selves to work and live through them, in order to facilitate higher consciousness, which will open them up to the flow of the mighty source. As the author unites her mind with that of her higher self, allows her higher self to think with and through her, and surrenders to the insights of her higher mind, wisdom flows. The result is inspired thinking that manifests in wisdom teachings aimed at opening up the minds of the readers to contemplate new perspectives and act as a catalyst for truth seeking. Through the material, the readers will hear celestial voices speak cosmic truths. The energy of the transmissions will inspire readers to desire spiritual independence, to experience and live a sovereign life reflective of their birthright, and to espouse their inalienable divine right to live in accordance with their highest conception of the divine. The messages will connect each reader to their immortal nature and illustrate that each is love, truth, wisdom, and knowledge, and it can be no less. Once again, that's A God Within, written by Hazel Sinanen, and it's S-I-N-A-N-A-N, and you can go and search for that on the internet. Also, of course, The Price of Power by Trent Scalina. A synopsis of that book is Michael Strafford has no idea that on that stormy day in October, he would meet a girl that will change his life forever and plunge him into an alternate world of magic and power. Once again, that book, The Price of Power by Trent Scalina. And now I would like to play an Audible ad, which comes in from our returning author many times here in the Writer's Lounge. It would be Brian Anderson. And here is his ad, and we'll be right back to bring back to the show Robin Eduardo.
Hi, this is Brian D. Anderson, author of The Goblin Chronicles, and I have an exciting opportunity for fans of the series. From now until New Year's Eve, I'll be accepting submissions for fan fiction short stories based on The Goblin Chronicles. They need to be between 1,000 and 25,000 words and be in some way about The Goblin Chronicles world or characters. And now that you know the rules, let's make with the excitement. Third prize, the signed copy of all four Goblin Chronicles books. Second prize, your short story will be professionally edited and published on Amazon.com. The grand prize, your short story will be edited and published, but you also win a contract to have a novel written by you and published under the GMTA label. That's right. If you win, you become a published author. Contract will include editing, proofing, and cover art. And if you haven't written your novel yet, don't worry. The contract's open-ended, so it will be there when you're ready. All submissions should be sent by midnight, January 1st, 2014, to thegoblinchronicles@gmail.com. And the winner will be announced February 3rd right here on this show. Good luck, and I'm looking forward to reading your stories.
Okay, Robin, and how are you doing? Let me just say, my wonderful and intelligent and enduring and special, beautiful, effervescent. Yes, we got that word in there. That's what we use for Lisa Lee, but she's over there in the peanut gallery there kind of waving her arms. So, Robin, welcome back to the Writer's Lounge. It's always great to have you here.
Oh, thank you. You're so funny. But I thought there was something up. I said, wait a minute. He forgot. You know, I need a little sucking up or something.
I know. I've always sucked up to you. So, I almost missed out on that.
At least somebody does.
So, lady, just a few days away from that very special day that a lot of us enjoy, yes. And I understand, and we've talked about it on past programs, but you do have another radio show that you're involved with on another station. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? And I understand it has a lot to do with Halloween.
In this case, it would be Halloween all the time. The show is a radio show that is on Tuesday nights at, from 9 to 10 p.m. on the alldigitalradionetwork.com, if you type that in. At that time, 9 p.m. on Tuesday nights, it'll play live. But you could also sort of meander your way through the website after that if you want to find the archive. The show is archived if you don't get to listen to it live. But basically it's horror, everything horror, monsters, zombies, ghosts. We've interviewed a couple of the Romero peeps, Dawn of the Dead, Night of the Living Dead, George Romero, a couple of the guys from his films. We've had a UFO investigator from MUFON. We've interviewed a guy that does the ghost hunters type of thing, like what you do, which you're into the paranormal. Yeah, so it's just it's an eclectic horror talk show, a little rock and roll. It's me and my co-host is Len Barnhart, and he's an author who also wrote the Reign of the Dead series, which is zombies. So we're kind of like, you know,
oh yeah, you're
peas
joined
and carrots.
At the hip. You're kind of joined at the hip. There,
oh yeah,
right?
Yeah.
What's,
yeah.
What's the
so,
name of the show again, Robin? The name of the show
On
again?
The Scare.
On the Scare.
The name of the show is On the Scare, and it's you could find it, like I said, on Tuesday nights, 9 to 10, on the alldigitalradionetwork.com, and it'll play live. And we also have a Facebook page. You just can, obviously, www.facebook, On the Scare. And that's about it. It's, like I said, it's just
cool.
A little of horror, a little bit of everything horror-related.
Yeah, and you did
a lot of zombies.
You mentioned zombies, and of course, everybody
yes.
out there who is a fan of zombies is probably also a fan of the Walking Dead series, which is now back on, and a lot of people are talking
mm-hmm.
about that.
Mm-hmm.
And as I talked to you a little bit off the air before the show started, I've gotten involved with the series, although I haven't really been following the storyline too closely, so I kind of watch it and I think I get kind of caught up in the gory parts of it, and that's one thing that we talk a little bit about here before we bring on our guest, which would
mm-hmm.
be Kevin. But I was wondering what you thought about the gore. You know, do you think there's too much blood involved with the series? Do you think it takes
in The Walking Dead or in just in horror in general? Because
well,
I mean,
let's
in,
go with
in,
The Walking Dead. Yeah, let's go to Walking
we'll
Dead.
We'll stay with, okay.
That, I think that's a good example of a movie or a series that has a lot of gore, and it does. So let's,
yeah,
let's,
for television, it really is. For television, the gore factor is really on the same level as what you would find in, you know, in the films. You know, theater, theatrical releases. So, yeah, it's very realistic. Very realistic, very graphic. However, zombies, you need something for some type of a post-apocalyptic event. It could be anything. It could be natural. It could be supernatural. So why not zombies? People find zombies very interesting because they're us, you know, at our very base, you know, I'm grasping for words, but our very, very base, I'm at a loss for words. I really am. But anyway, we just kind of, listen to me. I'm saying we, like I'm a zombie, but I try to get into the mind of a zombie. You know that from my book, but, their functions really, there's no thinking, there's no, they just consume, and so that's very, very scary. There's no thinking, there's no emotions. They just keep coming. They don't register pain.
They're an eating. They're basically
basically
an eating machine, right?
Yeah, they're the ultimate monster, really, if you think about it, because they really are us. They're our families and our neighbors and our friends. So,
yeah.
But The Walking Dead, if you see, and I know you said that, you know, you've sort of caught some of the episodes and you've been following, but not really, but you've, I guess, intended to start from this season on to catch up and keep with it, because I do recommend it because it is a human interest story. There's
right.
all sorts of characters. There's evil characters. I mean, non-zombie evil characters. You know, so that there's so much more to it than just the horror and the gore. And,
exactly.
Yeah, because it is graphic, but the stories are just...
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
I think the thing is with the gore and everything is that, you know, we do like that. That's a society that we do kind of reach out to. A lot of us do. Some of us find it a little bit too gory, but I think whenever you're telling a story, you need a good storyline, and I think they do a very good job on that series of promoting not just the gore, but also the storyline, too, because it's a storyline.
The humanistic side,
exactly. So anyway, I
because when you have to survive, go ahead. Yep. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Say what you were going to say.
I was just going to say, I just find it interesting that a lot of people will comment on those kind of things, and you know, they think we might be living in a time when we're experiencing too much gore, and that may be true, but I do think that people are enjoying it, and if they're enjoying it and people are buying it, then that's the way it is. So anyway, let's get on to the main event here. We could talk all night about zombies, but we're here to talk about Violet Black and the Curse of Camp Coldwater. It was written by Kevin Folliard and published by Create Space Independent Publishing Platform in 2013. And you may purchase it at Amazon.com/Kindle, and you can visit and find the author on Facebook. And Amazon has this to say about the book. Violet Black is the 13-year-old daughter of the world's most renowned paranormal investigator, and she's about to face the most terrifying ordeal of her young life, summer camp. Fitting, and it's hard enough, but when a campfire tale about an axe-wielding demon turns out to be more than fiction, Violet and her fellow campers have bigger problems. The investigation is on. With help from her new friends, Hector and Kelly, Violet's out to thwart the devious Happy Harry and become the most successful ghost hunter to ever enter eighth grade. And this is what I had to say about the book. This story is perfect for Halloween time or any time when you need a nice little scare to keep you thinking about what might be waiting for you in the darkness of the trees beyond the boundaries of a campfire's light. In the same flavor as a Nancy Drew drama and all of those wonderful teenage detective sleuths, Violet Black has to engage her investigative skills and ghost hunting experiences when she reluctantly heads off to summer camp. Her dad, a world-renowned paranormal investigator himself, heads off on assignment while trying to convince his daughter that 6 weeks at Camp Coldwater will be good for her and a lot of fun, much different than the dangers she might encounter while tagging along with him on his investigations. Violet resists and argues about going to camp, but she soon relents and accepts her fate. Little does her dad or Violet know, but the camp is haunted by a ghostly character named Happy Harry, who made a deal with the devil to remain in high spirits, and it involves killing innocent kids. So now, Violet is forced to face all of the dangers that Harry has planned. Violet meets new friends, and together they work to confront Harry, who happens to be more than just a campfire ghost story. Kevin Folliard once again delivers his own unique brand of shivers and chills, which will entertain and spook you during yet another Halloween season. The story flows nicely as he expertly creates and delivers his readers to Camp Coldwater, where you will feel like a kid again while meeting many of his interesting characters. And with the touch of the magic button, let's bring Kevin on once again to the Writer's Lounge. We welcome back, for the third time, Kevin Folliard.
Hi, Tom and Robin. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Hi, Kevin.
It's great to be back. Thanks for that nice review.
Yeah, it was fun doing that, and I always wonder if I'm not screwing your name up. How do you pronounce your last name?
You got it right. It's Folliard.
Folliard. Okay, good. I got that right.
Yeah, Folliard.
I certainly can't screw Kevin up.
So,
yeah, very good. So, my friend, you are, once again, as I said, on for the third time here in the Writer's Lounge. And Violet Black and A Curse of Camp Coldwater was a very interesting story for me, not only because I found it fun and entertaining, but also because I am a ghost hunter and a private investigator.
Right,
or,
I know. I'm so glad that you liked it. I was worried. Maybe I got some of the details wrong.
I'm like her dad. I was the dad in this story. I felt that I was separated and left my child to go to camp. But, Kevin, if you wouldn't mind, we'd love to hear an excerpt from your book.
Absolutely. It'd be my pleasure. I'm going to read an excerpt that is from a little bit later into the book. This is after Violet has already arrived at camp, and her new friend Hector had a ghostly encounter on the hiking trail outside the campgrounds. And nobody believes him, except, of course, for Violet. And she is trying to determine what he saw and if what he saw is supernatural, and just in general to help him out. So that's a little bit of context. Violet listened carefully. She no longer heard the clunking of Gary's axe. "For instance," she lowered her voice, "if you saw the axe that the guy had last night, would you recognize it?" Hector's eyes widened. "Yes, definitely. Oh, my God, it was so weird." They rounded the corner. Gary was gone, but his axe remained propped against the tree stump. Violet approached and pointed. "Is that it?" The axe sported a polished wood handle with a flat charcoal-colored blade and red tip. Hector examined it with a dull expression. "Well," Violet asked, "sort of looked like this, similar. I know it was dark." "It wasn't dark," Hector shook his head. "His eyes, they glowed like hellfire." "Right, sorry, but the axe." "Hey!" Gary rounded a cabin across the clearing. "Don't touch that," he shouted. Once he approached, his tone changed. "We don't want to have an accident, do we?" He smiled and ushered them away. "Sorry, Gary, we were just looking. I saw you chopping up all that firewood and wanted to show Hector where our bonfires come from. So cool, right, Heck?" Her forced enthusiasm rivaled Gary's. Hector just stared at her. "Why are you talking like that?" "Well, okay," Gary said, "but I'll bet you guys have activity starting soon. Get some breakfast in you. Breakfast is the lumber for the bonfire of a fun day." "I never thought of it that way." Violet grabbed Hector by the arm. "Come on, Hector, let's fuel up." She dragged him back towards the front of the building, away from the potential axe murderer. She pulled Hector aside and lowered her voice. "Happy Harry was about Gary's height, right? 6'1", 6'2"? "Yeah. And who was the first person on the scene after you ran out of the woods? After I found you?" "Gary." "Right, Gary. And who do I find this morning, slicing up lumber with an axe?" "Gary," Hector said. "But now I'm not saying anything one way or the other here," Violet faced. "But remember what I said about the most reasonable explanations usually being the right ones?" "Yeah, but," and Gary was so quick to dismiss your story. "He saw how hysterical you were, and he didn't even take you back to your cabin or calm you down. What kind of head counselor?" "Violet," Hector shouted. "What?" That axe was not Happy Harry's axe. "It wasn't?" "Not even close," Hector shook his head. "Happy Harry's axe," he ran his hand through the air along an imaginary weapon, "had this long, gnarled handle. It was all twisted. The blade was huge. It came out to this hooked C shape, and this is hard to explain, but it gave off heat, like he just held it in a fire or something. It was out of this world." Hector shook his head. "I don't know how else to explain it." Violet nodded. She'd seen this look on people's faces before. Hector really believed what he was saying, and she was starting to think he really did see something far weirder than Gary in a costume. "Okay," she said, "I believe you." "You do?" "Yep." Hector shook his head. "But why? I wouldn't believe me. It's crazy." "Can you keep a secret?" "Who would I tell? Everyone hates me." "Well, I don't hate you, Hector. In fact, I'd like to do you a favor." "What?" "I'm going to take your case." "My case?" Violet nodded. "I'm kind of a ghost hunter." Hector's eyes widened. "What, you thought you were the only weird kid at camp?"
Very good. And Kevin, you're not only a very good writer, but you're a very good storyteller too. I had this impression of sitting around a campfire, huddled under a blanket with these big round saucer eyes, listening to you as you told the story. So I think you're perfect. And I just have to ask you, have you ever gone and read your stories at a bookstore at all, or to any, you know, younger readers?
Yeah, I have. I love to do readings around the area. I've done readings at Frugal Muse Bookstore in Darien, Illinois. I've done some in downtown LaGrange, Illinois. I've done some and farmers markets and things like that. So I try to every now and then schedule a reading and let people come and listen to me and things. I think that's the best way to mix a little bit of viral marketing with a little bit of community marketing and let people sort of hear it straight from your mouth. That's sort of the most fun way to sell books too. So I do enjoy doing that.
Yeah. And
not only
it's
that, but
so
you
much
get,
more
get
than just a reading. Yeah, you get into the characters and you just fall right into the acting, the, you know what I mean? Like you're acting out the characters as you're reading. So you,
thank you.
As you're listening to the story, you get into it, and oh, it's just so wonderful to listen to you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Rob. It's fun. There are some quirky characters in the story too. So, well, Gary, the head counselor, is very like over the top. He's like too fun for words, and so he's kind
really
of
really animated. and the names too.
Yeah, Happy Harry, I found very interesting, and then Kevin. As we are all writers, and I have to think of Stephen King here when I ask this question, but one of the most frequently asked questions of writers is, where do you come up with your ideas for stories? So tell us, where did Camp Coldwater and Violet Black come from in your imagination?
Well, it was sort of a lengthy process how I got from the concept of Violet Black to this specific story. But really what happened for Violet is I was just kind of thinking about something I wanted to write next. I had just finished self-publishing my other book, Jay Carter and the Nightmare Gallery, or I was getting close. I can't remember where it was in that process, but I was thinking Jay Carter and the Nightmare Gallery was, I like that story a lot. It's a dark fantasy, but it's very dark. It's very philosophical. And I deliberately wanted to write something that was more fun and adventurous, but still dark and scary. So I thought it would be really fun to write something that was about, you know, kids who solve supernatural mysteries, and to be inspired by some of those, you know, like you said in your review, Nancy Drew and some of these other books that were more had more potential to just sort of spiral off into a series, and every single time you go on a different crazy adventure. So I wanted to give it more of that kind of a vibe, but still be true to the other kinds of things that I'm writing. And the other thing was I wanted to, for the first time, write a novel-length story with a girl protagonist, because I was starting to get – there's a lot of really great young adult books out right now with really strong female protagonists, but the thing that keeps bugging me about them is they all are just obsessed with choosing between boys and getting a boyfriend, and it kind of takes away from the spotlight. So I wanted to have a young adult book with a girl protagonist where she's not motivated by boys or dating at all, and it's all about friends and family and pursuing her interests and helping people, and that's it. And that's the way a lot of people's lives
being
are.
Being heroic.
So I figured there have to be young girls who you know, don't care about that side of things. So even though, you know, mainstream publishing will always put that in there, I thought, well, this is my chance to do what I want to do. So that was part of it, too.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yes, very much so. The story takes place at Camp Coldwater, and as I was reading it, I kept thinking of a camp that I went to when I was 10 back in central New York, Lourdes Camp. And there was a story about the screamer. Was this this being that was somehow a cross between human and some sort of an animal with long claws, and I can't think of the name of it right now. But he would chop trees down. But as I was reading your book, I had to wonder, Kevin, have you ever experienced going to camp such as Violet did and the characters in the book?
I have to confess, I never went to summer camp as a kid, but we
did
travel a lot. We took vacations in the North Woods of Wisconsin when I was a kid, and that's where the story takes place. So I'm familiar with kind of the wilderness aspect of it, but not really the camp experience. So I did my best to try to look into what that would be like and replicate as best I could what camp life is like for kids, not having had that experience myself.
Yeah, because
but I do love a good...
It was amazing.
Yeah, I do love a good ghost story.
When we went to that camp, the story about the screamer was foremost in everyone's mind, just as Happy Harry was foremost in a lot of kids' mind at Camp Coldwater. And I found it really interesting that it almost seemed like you were pulling something out of my memory, you know, that I could relate to, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to, and that's one thing about your stories, or about any story that a writer writes, there has to be an element in there where they connect up with the reader, where they can relate to it. If you can't relate to something, you're probably not going to find a story, very readable, and sometimes not even make it through the book. So kudos to you for doing that, and I thought it was really good. And of course,
I'd love to hear the story about the screamer sometime.
Yeah, we'll get into that a little bit. But that was my childhood story, and everybody was afraid to go into the woods just as the kids there at Camp Coldwater, so it was great. Your books have a certain scare ingredient to them, and it being around Halloween time, it's great. But when you set out to scare your readers, can you tell us a few of your secrets? You don't have to reveal all of them, Kevin, but how do you set up a story for a good fright? Is there any kind of ingredient that you use to do that?
That is such a good question. I'm going to issue a disclaimer first, and then I'm going to actually tell some secrets of being scary. But the first and foremost, I think the cool thing about scary stories is that there are so many different ways to scare so many different kinds of people, and everyone has a unique set of fears. So we're all scared of different things. So when you make a story scary for one person, inevitably it's not going to be scary for another person. So I think the first thing you have to accept if you're going to be writing horror or scary stories is you can't please everyone, so you don't want to overthink it too much. It's just like comedy. Something might be funny to one person and not funny to another person. So as long as some people are going to be scared by what you're writing about, that's the primary thing that I think matters. But having said that, I do think there are some pretty good universal rules that I've picked up, and I can't claim that I, made these rules up myself. I wish I had, but they're all from, other things I've heard about writing scary stories and ghost story writers, people like M.R. James and Stephen King. And I think here are a few pretty good ones. I'd say make the danger as real as possible. Because even if your story is kind of like Violet Black, it's aimed at kids or younger readers, you still want there to be stakes, even if there's not a high body count in the story. There has to be a reality like ours, like what you said, a relatable reality where there's real danger, people can get hurt, there are close calls, and they have to feel real. So real danger is a pretty important ingredient. Another thing is a contemporary setting along with those relatable characters. And this is kind of one that a lot of people I don't think know about. But a lot of writers, I think, who are into horror are also into sci-fi and fantasy. They all go hand in hand because they're all about extraordinary situations or out of otherworldly things. But I've realized as I've started writing more that it's a lot harder to make a story scary if your setting is outlandish. So if you have a story set in outer space or another dimension or, some reality or world that's very different from our own and in too far remote from our own, it's really hard to make it scary. It can be done, but I try to shy away from that. I'd rather bring the scary to the everyday rather than the other way around.
What comes to my mind there, Kevin, in regards to what you're talking about there is the Twilight Zone series where a lot of what happened to those characters in those series took place in other worlds. But, of course, that was the visual that we saw on TV. It wasn't in a book. But I think that's very well put. Robin, any thoughts or questions on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's right because you have to be able – I agree to tone it down and make it like for the everyday man so that you can relate to it because there's a lot of scary things in just a normal life that you can kind of exploit.
Sure.
I don't know if that's the right word, but
no, it is the right word. I think
that just
right
happens.
Enough, at least.
Yeah. That happens every day. There's something going on in the world and you could use that as your inspiration.
I think you might be right, too.
And in your case, it was
the
camping.
In visual mediums like film and TV, it might be easier to make a sci-fi fantasy story scary because you're already seeing it. But in a book, you have to really
set it
up.
Yeah, you're feeding it.
And that takes you away from it.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be done. It's just more challenging. So, I mean, basically, if I'm reading a story about people and on a space station in a time far off or whatever, it could be really cool and entertaining, but it's not likely to scare me in as guttural a way as a story about someone walking home in a dark alley. And that's just a generalization,
yeah.
But it's sort of a rule that I've tried to keep in mind as I write.
Yeah, because everybody's had that feeling.
Yeah.
You know, the hair standing on the back of your neck, you know,
yeah.
that fear of
right.
going down that dark alley. Yeah, you could relate to that.
Happy.
Because
Happy
everybody's
Harry.
Been through it.
Happy Harry is out there waiting for you folks. So
yeah.
go to your nearest dark place in the woods and wait for Happy Harry to come along. But anyway, I forgot to mention.
Don't go pee.
I forgot to mention at the top of the show, if anybody would like to call us, 626-213-5613 or our toll-free line at 877-878-1436. And this is Halloween, so call us up and let's talk scary with Kevin Folliard and Robin and myself. So please give us a call. And Kevin... you were briefly touching on some of your favorite authors a little while ago, but what have you learned from them specifically in writing your story? Let's take somebody like Stephen King. I believe probably you've taken a few gems from him, right?
Oh, yeah. I think Stephen King is probably one of – personally, he's my favorite modern author who has written On Writing, which is the book is literally named On Writing, and I try to read that once a year because he has so many incredibly insightful things to say about writing in that book. So I try to keep advice from authors like him in mind. And I mentioned M.R. James as I was talking about scary things, too. He's a good scary story writer who kind of knew how to make a good ghost story, and he was a turn-of-the-century writer. But all the rules he kind of made up about it are very much – they're very universal. They still work today. And I've also read a lot. I mean, I think that the funny thing about my writing is I feel like I have a more of a less-is-more style, and I'm very concise and direct, and my books tend to be shorter than other writers, and I like short stories a lot. And it doesn't seem – I'm having a hard time thinking about where I got that because I read a lot of books by more verbose authors like Tolkien and Stephen King and you know, so I think what I got more from the kinds of authors I read growing up was themes and like the kinds of stories that really spoke to me more so than the writing style. They all kind of wrote about ordinary people who suddenly find themselves in extraordinary situations. So that
yeah.
seems to be more where my inspiration came from than the mechanics of the style of the way different authors write. I'm not sure where I got my writing style. Maybe it was like a combination of fiction writing and academics that just sort of merged into this very concise, direct thing.
Your writing style is very unique, and I would say that for some people that they start off writing short stories, I would encourage them to try to write a longer or novel-length story. But in your case, Kevin, you've hit a niche, I think, and keep doing what you're doing. But maybe at some point, maybe you might want to try a longer version of one of your stories or come up with a longer novel. But, yeah, you seem to have fallen right into a really good place there with what you've been writing.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I would love to write something longer. It seems that everything that I write, actually getting back to Stephen King a little bit, he has this metaphor of fiction writing being kind of like archaeology or paleontology where you're uncovering a fossil. And it seems like the stories I keep uncovering tend to not be more than, you know, like 200 pages is a long story for me in a fully formatted book.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe someday I will find some story that's just epic. Or I think what ends up happening is even when I feel like something like Violet Black, which could be a series, I think to myself, well, I could write more about this character, but in several books rather than
sure.
500
yeah,
page
I like the idea. Absolutely. Yeah, I like the idea of Violet Black being a series because I'm a fan of I like the Trixie Belden series, actually. I know there was the Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys series, but I like Trixie Belden, which I don't know why I related to her more, but I just did. And I don't know if you're
that's cool.
You know who she's about, but it's her personality is similar to Violet Black in that there's a little bit of boy. If you have a girl and she's a preteen, she's going to be interested in boys. But she
right.
was more like, even though these books were written, I think, in the late 50s to maybe 60s to mid 60s, because it was a series. It's nice having that girl that's kind of, you know, she becomes a hero and tries to figure out what's going on around her and take charge instead of waiting for the boy to come in and rescue her.
Right. Yeah.
I like the idea that, you know, if you do decide to make it a series, that absolutely, I'm right behind that one.
Okay.
So
I kind of felt like this book was almost like a pilot for a series. So I'm going to try to submit it to contests and get it as much exposure as I can and then just see what happens. I would love to write more, but
I think girls, they like series books. And I think the type of character, you know, that you've created with Violet Black is a good, that's great. A girl power type of thing, not
right. Yeah,
not too much girl power, though, right?
Paranormal romance stuff. I don't
over the planet.
Well, I mean, well, that's what new Amazons. No, that would be something else. But we need more girl power type books. I think so.
I think so too, especially for young
girls.
I
do agree with that too. And speaking of Violet Black and the character, how much influence do your characters have on your writing in the direction of your story, Kevin? Do they sort of control you, or do you control them? We ask our writers that all the time on the show.
I would say that the characters tend to control the story. I mean, it's such an interesting question. It's kind of getting back to that fossil analogy, the Stephen King analogy. The idea being that you come up with an idea, you're seeing a part of the story, and you uncover the rest of it. So in the case of Violet, I came up with the character before I decided what the inaugural adventure of hers would be. So she does kind of drive the story, because I knew what kind of a kid Violet was. I knew what kind of a person she was, and I knew what she would do in a situation like that. So I put her in the situation, and then I gave her some friends, and, you know, the other characters, of course, are pre-discovered, fleshed-out characters in their own right, too. So I try to just be true to the characters that I've come up with and make them behave in ways that are rational and reasonable to how they behave in that situation. And the story kind of goes from there. So, I mean, there's a little bit of plotting of the events of the story, of course, but I think it's all connected. So I would say that it's fair to say that Violet kind of drives the story, because I try very hard not to have her do something or say something or behave in a way that doesn't feel natural to her.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yep.
Out of character, yeah.
Right.
Yes. The other thing we were talking about before the show, before we brought you on, was sort of the shock value, as we would see in the zombie series with the gore and all of that. But in your business, which would be writing, is there anywhere where you would draw the line, as in the shock value or storyline, more important to you? And how do you decide on where to go with that?
That's a very good question, and I thought it was so cool that you guys were talking about Walking Dead, because I love The Walking Dead as well. I would say certainly that shock value is not really – it's overrated to a lot of people. I definitely try, especially because I write more for 12 and up. So I believe less is more in trying to scare
people.
Yeah,
you have
even
to
if you're an adult. Yeah, because the more you lay it on, the more you kind of take people out of it sometimes too, the more bloody and gross and disgusting it gets. Suddenly it's not so much scary, suddenly it's disgusting. So I try to draw the line at very violent or grotesque imagery. I'd rather let, if there's something very violent that happens at the end of a short story or something, I usually kind of let the ending sort of suggest it and let the reader's imagination kind of take it and do with it what they want.
Fill in the gap.
Yeah, right, because you sometimes what the reader's imagination does is scarier than what you can explain with words, so that's kind of an interesting phenomenon that I try to play with, especially with scary stories. And with Violet or Jake Carter, I try to push the boundaries of what, you know, a censor might think is kids can't handle, because I really believe kids are very smart and they can handle anything life can throw at them just like an adult. But I also don't want there to be anything gratuitous or disgusting or unnecessary.
Yeah, very good. I imagine that was going to be your answer. The other thing that I found interesting while reading Violet Black and the Curse of Camp Coldwater was the idea, and this comes up a lot, of course, with authors and authors that have been on the Writer's Lounge, but authors always love to see their books become movies, Kevin, and I was just wondering, who would you like to see playing the main characters in your book? I would think of maybe Violet and what's that camp counselor's name? Is it Gary? And of course,
Head Counselor Gary. It's tough to
do.
Do
you have
the,
characters?
For the main
characters. Do you have
what's that,
actors? Robin? You have any ideas? Do you have any ideas of actors if you were gonna cast them in the roles?
Well, the
I
thing
mean,
is,
that
for
know, have
young
you ever really
for the young characters, for the 13-year-old, 12-year-old characters. I don't think I'm familiar enough with the up-and-coming child actors, so I would just say, for them, I would love to just see them cast an unknown and give some kid their big break or whatever, assuming that it's that successful.
Yeah, that would be great.
But for the adult characters, I don't know. Someone with a lot of personality would have to play Head Counselor Gary, but I think that would be perfect for Happy Harry. I think of Ray Park, who's like a stunt actor, and he played Darth Maul in Star Wars and the Headless Horseman in the Tim Burton Sleepy Hollow. I would love to see him flipping around and spinning his axe and doing all sorts of crazy things.
Yeah, I was thinking of Jack Nicholson.
And that would be exciting for Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
He's too old.
Here's Johnny.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. His arthritis wouldn't allow him he wouldn't be much of a threat.
He wouldn't be too happy, would he?
He does swing a mean axe, though, in The Shining.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah, good old Jack Nicholson. Yeah, he's managed to scare the living crap out of a lot of people in his time and the movies that he was in. It's always good to see a book become a movie or even just a television series or whatnot. It would be fun to see Camp Coldwater become some sort of a mini series or something for
I'd
TV.
Love it, yeah.
But, yeah. Okay,
maybe I'll
Kevin.
Pitch it to Nickelodeon. They'll do a series.
Like they had the Goosebumps and
like
stuff
Goosebumps,
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Fear Street books. Yeah, that was big.
That would work. That would work really well.
There you go.
Kevin, how long did it take you to write Camp Coldwater?
It was from conception to the finished published product. It was probably about 2 years. I came up with the idea, like, kind of when I was sort of deciding what I wanted to write next, like a Nightmare Gallery, which was darker. I wanted to do something lighter, so I came up with the idea. I thought about it a lot. I did a lot of brainstorming. I came up with Violet and who her friends were and what her series would be like. And then the following November, after coming up with this, I think that was the summer, maybe summer 2011 or something, and then I wrote a draft of Violet Black for National Novel Writing Month. So from the conception to the draft National Novel Writing Month to the actual final product, it was almost exactly 2 years.
Okay, good.
Mm.
Good. Robin, get any?
No, that's pretty fast. That's fast.
That's pretty fast for me. But the last book I wrote was Nightmare Gallery. That was about 7 years. So I must have learned something between one and the other. And then the other thing is Violet's shorter, too. So Violet is only, formatted, it's only about 150 pages, whereas Nightmare Gallery was over 200 pages.
Yeah.
So I think I had more of an idea of what I wanted from the ground up from it, and I had less to edit and revise. So it came together more smoothly.
Out of the three books that we had you on in the Writer's Lounge when you were on, which is your favorite?
That's a good question. I think probably Jay Carter and the Nightmare Gallery is still my favorite. That's the one that I worked on for the – maybe it's more just like – it's me. I don't know. I've heard people say that any one of those three was their favorite of my books, so I think it's just perspective. But I worked on that one the longest. I feel like there's more of me in it, and there's more of my personal philosophies and ideas and reflections are in that book more potently, so it's more special to me in that way. But I really am proud of Violet too. I think she's a great character, and I think that it has a lot of potential to go in so many different directions if I ever got to a publisher who was interested in it. So they're both great books, but I think Jay Carter's edges out Violet a little bit for me.
Cool. Cool. Okay, we've got a little less than 8 minutes here. Once again, if you want to call and get a quick question or comment in to Kevin and the rest of us here at the Writer's Lounge, you can call us at 626-213-5613 or toll-free at 877-878-1436. And, Kevin, I'm pretty sure, I'm fairly certain that we asked you this question last time around here in the Writer's Lounge, because we always ask this, so I'm going to ask you again, if you could sit down and talk with a famous person, who would it be, and what would be the first question you would ask them?
You did ask me this question before, and I think it stumped me last time, because I have such a hard time with this question. I really have a lot of famous people that I admire, but I don't get, like, starstruck I don't have that drive where I want to meet famous people, because I never know what I would say to them. So I think that I'd rather meet someone who isn't famous and has something important to say, because famous people have their important things well documented, so I can always seek out what they had to say about something important. But there's a lot of people who don't get heard.
Well, I'm not famous. You can ask me a question.
What was your favorite of my books, Tom? Which one?
Which one was my favorite of the three?
Yeah.
Oh gosh, it's they're all neck and neck. I really liked Violet. I really liked that because it was something, once again, that took me back to when I was a child, into an experience that I had. I felt like I was right there alongside of those kids, and it was special for me to read that book.
Thank you very much. That's very nice of you to say. Thank you.
What about, you got a question for Robin?
Who's your favorite Walking Dead character, Robin?
Oh, well, you know, I really hope they get the medicine, because Glenn is sick. And I think right now Glenn is becoming one of my favorite characters. Of course, the easy pick is Daryl, because he's just so hot.
I haven't seen any of season four yet. I'm only up to season 3, so I don't know everything that's going on, but I love Glenn is one of my favorites too.
Yeah, well, because his character is developing from when he first appeared. He was
a
pizza delivery boy. You know, the little nerd, the least respected, you know, kind of ignored. And here he is in the apocalypse, and he's just like a little, I don't know, what would you call that? He's just all over, like a ninja all over the place, able to get in and out of you know, some pretty hairy situations because they're in Atlanta at the time when he's introduced.
Right.
So
the
he
survivor.
Goes from this. Yeah. So he really, the ultimate, because his character generally, you know, when he was introduced, you would imagine, oh, he's not going to be able to make it. He's weak, physically weak.
Yeah.
You know, he's not a, you know. Yeah. So he's really come so far and.
Right.
And I just, I love the love story, you know, between him and Maggie.
Maggie, yeah.
You know, so, yeah. So, of course, like I said, I could say the easy pick with Daryl because he's really hot and all that. But I really like the story that's developing, you know, between him and Maggie and how things are going down. I want to see, you know, where they go with their love story.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's a good answer.
I can't say much more than that, only because you said you didn't see the new season.
Yeah.
You didn't start the new season yet, so I'm not giving anything away yet. But there's a lot of good stuff coming.
Okay, good. I look forward to it.
There is, and I'm
all
really
right.
looking forward to the rest of that. And Kevin, we've reached the end of our time here once again. We could go on and on and on. We wish you much success, and we'll be waiting to hear from your next endeavor in the writing world, and I'm sure that you'll probably make another return visit to the Writer's Lounge. So once again, my friend, thank you for being on the show. You've been a wonderful Halloween host here. You're probably one of my favorite first-time authors for as far as scaring the living crap out of people. That would be Kevin Folliard. So, Kevin, thank you so much for coming on. And before you go, where can everybody find you?
You can find – well, I have a website. It's www.kevinfolliard.com. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook, Kevin M. Folliard. And Christmas Terror Tales has a Facebook page. And there's a free Christmas Terror Tales Kindle story that people should download for their Kindles all week from Monday through Friday. So it's called Christmas Terror Tales Presents Below, and you can see links all over the place on my website and Facebook and everything. So thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you, Kevin, and best of luck
Halloween.
And happy Halloween. Yep, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Yeah, happy Halloween.
Bye. Thanks.
Okay, Robin, we're running about 2 minutes here till the end of our show. We still play the music near the end, as we do. It's the Rainbow Weather is the name of the song, and I want to wish everybody once again a very happy Halloween, and don't be too scared of what's in the dark out there. And Robin, what do we tell our readers and our listeners and our writers at the end of the show?
As always, everybody who's been listening and who's not listening and should be listening, good reading and good writing. Have a great night.
Yes, and watch them zombies, folks. Good night.
Yeah. Good night.
Dark as night in the middle of the day. Your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. spoke to Noah one beautiful morn. He said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. Like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart.